This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's Matt Jones.
1 week left in the college baseball season. Arkansas tied for the lead in the SEC West with Texas A&M going into its series at Alabama. The Razorbacks and the Crimson Tide will play Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this week. All of the games in the SEC are Thursday, Friday, Saturday. It's how the SEC has done things for the last several years in order to give teams an extra day to rest their pitching before the SEC tournament that begins next Tuesday in Hoover, Alabama. The Razorbacks in a pretty good spot to have a bye in the tournament. They haven't clinched it yet, though. They've got to do some work in Tuscaloosa in order to get that bye. If they get the bye, then they would play their first game in Hoover next Wednesday. Matt Jones with Bubba Carpenter. And Bubba, we're coming off the Vanderbilt series. And I think that, as has been the case a lot this year, I see a lot of overreaction to series, both wins and series losses. The way I look at Vanderbilt is that this is kind of like the Alabama football of college baseball. If you go back 7-8 years, there has not been a more consistent program in the country than Vanderbilt. They've won 2 national championships during that time. They lost the national championship series in 2015. They lost the national championship series last year in 2020. I think they could have potentially been the national champion had the season not gotten shut down. It's just been an incredible run of consistency for Tim Corbin's program. People look at the record this year and say, oh, well, no, Vanderbilt's not as good as they have been in the past. And there may be some truth to that, although I think they're heating up, and they would be a team that I wouldn't want to see in my bracket as a 2 seed in the postseason, assuming they don't get to host. Arkansas was right there with them for 2 games last weekend. Arkansas wins handily in game 2, where the series was won, I thought, was on Enrique Bradfield's home run in the 10th inning on Friday night with 2 outs. That was what ultimately I thought gave Vanderbilt this series, was that they were able to make one more play in a really competitive game on Friday night. And I'm still not sold on Arkansas being as down as I think some people might want to say they are based on that loss to Vanderbilt.
I think you're right, Matt. You know, people look at it and they look at how Sunday's game went. Well, you know, we faced a really good pitcher. We faced a freshman. Now, going into that game, I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, we're facing a freshman. We're in great shape. A freshman lefty, you know, he has okay numbers, but he's pitched really, really, really well lately. I thought, man, we're in great shape, right where we need to be. Now, the Friday night loss stung. I mean, it really did. It was one of those where you can go back and look at a lot of things that keep you up at night if you play that what if game. But you know, we battled back from a 5-0 deficit, had a chance to win the game, you know, really should have won the game. Game 2, you know, great. We won going away. I think the rain, you know, the rain was a factor. I really do. I think we had a lot of momentum going into game 3. I think that played a role in it. But I agree with you. I think Vandy's a good team. I think people don't realize, they look at a 500 record in the SEC and they're like, okay, we should sweep this series. Well, you know what? It's not that easy. They got off to a slow start. Most of their losses were early in the season. And you look at how they played lately, and they're a really good team.
Carter Holton, who shut him down on Sunday, by the way, this was a pitcher who a lot of people thought would be a first round, maybe sandwich round, early second round pitcher a year ago. There are reports that he turned down in the millions of dollars to go play at Vanderbilt last season. He ends up getting taken in the 19th round, which was the second to last round of last year's draft. And I think that it really kind of goes back to what you and I were talking about a little bit earlier before the podcast, is that, you know, Vanderbilt is so reliant this year on freshmen, and in particular, you know, freshman pitchers. I mean, you look at 3 of their 4 starters for the majority of the season have been freshmen. Carter Holton is a freshman. Devin Futrell, who started on Friday night and who has been their midweek starter for most of the year, that's a freshman. And what I think you've seen out of Vanderbilt over the last 4 or 5 weeks are that the freshmen have really grown up, and that they're learning to play at this level, or they're learning to, you know, pitch better at this level. And, you know, Carter Holton, he's one of those guys that I think by the time he's a junior, you're talking about, you know, potential top 10 overall pick. I just thought that was a big time arm that Arkansas ran into on Sunday.
I do too. And, you know, it's a different look. You know, he's listed as 5'11 on the I don't think he's 5'11", but you know, so the way the ball comes out of his hand, it's kind of a different angle coming into the zone. It's got some carry on it. It's got some really late life. He's got a really quick, violent delivery. So it's hard to see the ball out of his hand. You know, pretty good breaking ball and a pretty good changeup. You know, on certain pitches, you could see where he slowed his arm down a little bit. But, you know, he still made some really good pitches. But the thing is that fastball, he was able to spot that fastball into lefties, away to righties. And he was getting, you know, he was getting a little bit off the plate. But, you know, it was a strike zone that was a typical SEC strike zone. It's a little frustrating at times watching it. But, you know, it is what it is. And that's not why we got shut out. We got shut out because we faced a really good pitcher that's throwing mid-90s in the seventh inning, you know, after 113 pitches. I mean, he's just sometimes you got to tip your hat. And, you know, he shut us down. He really did. You know, seven innings, two hits. You know, there's not many guys that can do that with this Razorback lineup.
Vanderbilt came into the series. They were number four nationally in whip, number four nationally in ERA. Given those two stats and what they had done against Georgia the week before, you know, they'd even pitched A&M well, I think, in at least one, maybe two of those games that they played against the Aggies a couple of weeks ago. You know, I thought Arkansas played okay at the plate for those first couple of games, given the quality of pitching that they were going against. You and I talked about this last week. I don't know that they had seen a pitching staff that was this deep or this talented this year, and they end up scoring 17 runs over the first two games. And I think that's part of what made game three so surprising, just that there was, you know, there just was no production offensively.
You know, you look at you go into Friday night and we're facing a freshman. He's a Tuesday night guy that's got really good numbers. But it was his first SEC start ever. I mean, that was the gutsy call by Tim Corbin to put him out there on the mound at Baum Walker, who's a tough place to pitch on a Friday night. It's about as rowdy as it gets. And, you know, the guy pitched a good game. I mean, he really did. He went five innings, five hits, four runs. But where I was impressed is our Saturday, the way we approach who, in my opinion, is the best pitcher for Vanderbilt, Chris McIlvain. That the guy's got good numbers. I mean, he's been really good all year. He's been their Saturday guy. I think he started a couple of Fridays, but he's just got really good numbers. I mean, we had a great approach against him. Four innings, three hits, six runs, drew five base on balls. You know, you look at the four innings, three hits, you're like, well, okay, only three hits, but we had some quality at bats in there. We had four, drew five base on balls. We only struck out three times, but this guy's really good. He's got great stuff. And I thought our approach against him was great. And so, you know, once again, going into game three, I'm like, yeah, we're in great shape. We're right where we need to be. And just ran up against a guy that was hot, had a really good day. And he's a good pitcher. And like you said, you're going to hear a lot about him. Unfortunately, we're going to have to face him for two more years. So, you know, that's part of the game. But oh, if you look at the overall weekend, and we gave ourselves a chance to win the series, and we just didn't, you know, we didn't do it. You can second guess stuff and go back and say, well, if this would have happened or if this would have happened. But that's the game of baseball. You can't do anything about it.
Arkansas's got a lot of left-handed hitters, and you know, what we've seen this year kind of be the real kryptonite for this lineup has been left-handed pitching. Now, that's not all left-handed pitching. You can't lump it all together. But when you think about the times that they've been shut down, you know, for prolonged periods of times, a lot of times it's been because there's been a left-hander on the mound. You saw it against Stanford down in Round Rock. You saw it the other night against Vanderbilt. I think back to the six innings that Jacob Palish threw against them in College Station when they played Texas A&M a few weeks back. Do you think it has something to do with the fact that Arkansas is such a left-handed heavy lineup, or what do you see when they're facing left-handers that make it to where they don't have as much success? And I know that's kind of that may not be the best question, because left-handed pitching obviously shuts down a lot of lineups.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is lefties are in the SEC because they're really good, Matt. And, you know, if you look at other teams, I'm sure there's a lot of teams around the SEC that hit lower against lefties than they do righties. And I think Dave's done a really good job of putting lefties in the lineup that hit lefties well. I really think so. And, you know, you look at Carter Holton, he just made good pitches. I look at some of the fastballs he threw into our lefties. I mean, he was spotting those things in an inch or two off the plate at the top of the zone. I mean, that's a tough pitch to hit lefty. But overall, you look at the lefties we faced, I just think we faced good lefties, and their job is to get outs. That's why they're here in the SEC. And most of the lefties that we're facing here in the SEC are guys that are going to be future big leaguers. And so I don't read a ton into that. You know, I don't have our splits right here in front of me. We're 20 something points lower against lefties than we are righties, which isn't a crazy number. And for the most part, you've got a couple guys in the lineup that definitely struggle. You know, I love Zach Gregory, but he struggles against lefties. Borfin, Diggs, Slavens, there's not a huge difference in their numbers for righties and lefties right there. So, you know, it's just a product of facing good lefties, I think, here in the SEC.
I was a little surprised not to see Chris Lanzilli in game three.
I was too. And, well, you know, we talked about it on the air, and, you know, I didn't know if maybe that was a matchup issue with righties versus lefties and Holton and how hitters fare against him. I do know he's got a really live fastball. Chris Lanzilli's, you know, he does a great job of hitting sliders, off-speed pitches. You know, I don't know if it had something, if it was bat speed related or just matchup related or just, you know, Dave just had a hunch. And, you know, but yeah, I was surprised to see him not in there, but I guarantee you DVH has a real good reason for why he wasn't in there. And, you know, maybe we'll ask him that one day.
I want to talk about the rain delays. The first one on Saturday night, it was so unfortunate because it killed what had been the best atmosphere all season. They announced 11,000 something people at the game, and I bet it's not a whole lot less than that were actually in the stands. It was really the first time that I can think of this year when you look down at the seats and most of the seats were full. You looked out into the hog pen and it was, you know, packed and, you know, kind of almost like a regional type atmosphere. To Arkansas's credit, they come out Sunday morning an 11 a.m. restart in the bottom of the sixth inning, and they're really good at the plate for the first couple of innings against some good Vanderbilt relief pitchers. Guys like, you know, Patrick Riley was one of the ones I remember throwing during the restart. Hanson was another one who'd had some success for them. I thought Arkansas came out really well on Sunday. And then we're going to get into the second part here in just a minute, but let's talk about the restart first and what you saw from them after the restart, where they get a run quickly in the sixth inning, then they get two more runs in the seventh inning, and they're able to pull away and get a nice-looking 11-6 victory.
No, I think it was huge. And then I really, you know, some people are like, well, there's, you know, they talk about momentum in baseball. I think it was huge what ended up happening, because we were rolling right there. You know, Caden Wallace hits that bomb to put us ahead to right field. It was a great swing, hit it halfway up the scoreboard. You know, the crowd's into the game. It's ruckus. You know, we were expecting a 30-minute delay, and then boom, we were going to be on the field again. I think it's huge, Matt. You know, we ended up with, I don't even know how long the delay was officially, but there was a long wait. Now, a lot of fans, to their credit, stuck around for that game, but I think it just kind of – I think we just lost our momentum. Now, would it have mattered when it came to facing Carter Holton? I think it would have. I think the crowd would have been loud. I think we would have been on a roll, and I think it could have really affected things. You know, you look at, there's so many things. You look at Caden Wallace's home run in the first inning. We'll never know if that was fair or foul because we didn't get a review. The body language from the people up in the Mackey Landing said to me that it was fair. Caden Wallace said his body language said that ball's fair. That can change things too. And once again, it's crazy that, you know, with the game of baseball, or maybe it's just me, how I can go back over a game and say, wow, if this happened, if this would happen. But you look at all those things, but I really do think that rain delay was huge. And just the way it affected our team, and maybe it did, maybe it wouldn't have had a bearing on it, but in my mind it did.
Yeah, I kind of think it did too. And then, you know, the other thing that happens during the rain delay is that maybe an hour and a half into it, if you were sitting in the press box, you certainly felt this, Bubba, is that the wind shifted. And instead of having, you know, this nice southwest wind, all of a sudden that wind came back around and it was blowing in from left field, kind of a colder wind. And we've seen with this team this year that they struggle some whenever they're hitting into a strong wind. And I thought that was a huge factor in game three that I really haven't heard talked about a whole lot is how the wind shifted, and they were hitting into a really strong wind during that game.
I think so. And, you know, we didn't hit a lot of balls hard off a hole, but we did square up some balls deep into the wind that, you know, if we hit them early in the game, our home runs. And, you know, once again, I know Dave is tired of people talking about the wind and the umpires and all that, but hey, it's a factor in the game. It really does. And there's times that it affects you more than others. And this was a time where, you know, it did have an effect. Now, would we have won? Who knows? You don't know, but it did. It, when that wind shifted, it did play a role in it.
Does that change things as a hitter? Because, you know, you're out there going through batting practice at 9 a.m., 9:30 on Sunday morning, and you're hitting into conditions that are totally different than you're hitting into when that second game begins, because there's no batting practice in between the games. You're just going back out. Does that have a difference that it's something mentally that maybe you haven't prepared for during the pregame leading up to it?
Yeah. You know, it can affect you a little bit, Matt, but for the most part, you've got a scouting report you're going off of, and you're looking to square that ball up and cut it in half, you know? So I guess ultimately, no, you're going up there and having good at bats. A lot of our guys' swings, when we're on playing with that ball, we produce a fly ball. So it can affect you. But as far as their approach to play, it really doesn't affect anything. I mean, we're not trying to hit the bottom half of the ball or the top half of the ball. We're just trying to hit the ball hard and get pitches that, you know, if the wind's blowing out, you hunt pitches up a little bit where you can put that barrel on the ball. It's already elevated. It's going to go. That's the only thing. But for the most part, we're just trying to put together good at bats. And so I don't think it had a big factor in it, but I will say there were a couple balls hit hard. I remember Dylan Leach hit a ball to right field and he crushed that ball. And mm-hmm. had it been hit earlier in the game, that ball's off the scoreboard. And there were a couple other that were hit hard too, but you know, Vandy hit a couple the same way that were deep into the wind. So it might not have changed anything. Who knows?
Yeah, I feel bad for Dylan Leach because he hit it at Spencer Jones. And Spencer Jones had a rough first couple of games in the field, and then he makes an incredible catch at the wall. And that was a big turning point in that game in game three. I also felt bad for Jackson Wiggins, Bubba, because he was off to a really good start, I thought, in game three against Vanderbilt, and then ran into just a little bit of trouble. I think there was a single and a walk in the fifth inning. And because of how you have to play in a seven inning game, you got to, you know, it's the fifth inning at that point. It's kind of like the seventh inning. And you could see it on his face whenever he walked a batter or gave up a hit. I forget how the sequence went. And he looks over at the dugout and here comes Dave Van Horn. And it's like, oh, are you kidding? He didn't say that, but that was the look he had on his face. He had eight strikeouts, just one walk. From a command standpoint, it was one of the better games that we've seen from him. And now that's back-to-back weeks where Jackson Wiggins has gone out and given you, you know, in any other instance, they're going to let him pitch through that trouble in the fifth inning. But this back-to-back weeks now where he's gone out and given you a really good start. And I think that's something, some positive momentum that they can potentially take into Alabama this weekend.
Oh, absolutely. I thought Jackson was great on Sunday. I really did. His fastball, you know, it was 97, 98, but it just had a little extra life on it. I thought he threw some really good sliders. You know, didn't throw a lot of changeups, but he didn't have to because his other two pitches were so good. But he was spotting that fastball on both sides of the plate, and I thought he looked great. And like you said, had it not been a seven inning game, you know, which I think it sucks. I hate it. As soon as I got the word that it was going to be a seven inning game, which I figured it would, I was like, this hurts us, you know, more than anything else. This really affects us because I really liked where we were set up bullpen wise and pitching wise. I think that played a bigger role than anything in it. But, you know, any other time they leave Jackson out there, he pitches through it. But I thought he looked great. He threw 85 pitches, you know, four innings, four hits. But I just thought he looked good. It was good to see him come back because that's a huge game. That's probably the biggest game of the year so far. And, boy, he clutched up big for us.
Rather short starts again for Connor Noland and Hagen Smith. That's 2 weeks in a row that we've seen that from both of them. Do you think fatigue is starting to play a factor at all with either of them?
You know what? Early on when they were going upper 90s, the low hundreds on their pitch counts. I said something. I said, I hope this doesn't come back to hurt us later in the year with some dead arm or something. I don't think so. And, you know, I look at Connor Nolan's start Friday night, and look, he gave up four runs in the second inning. But if you look at how he gave those runs up, he didn't really get hit hard. I'll go through it real fast. You weren't at the game, but let's say the second inning, he strikes out the leadoff guy, Bulger, on a slider, really good pitch away. He walks Javier Vaz on a 3-1 pitch. Parker Nolan hits a 2-strike fastball up and away. He just put a good swing on it. His power, Parker Nolan's power, is to left center, hit a home run to left center. Good piece of hit, nothing you can do about it. Then he walked Cole Wick on a 3-2 pitch. Then he gives up a little, just a dribbler to the right side to Carter Young. Now, it was an 0-2 pitch, but it was an 0-2 pitch out of the zone, and he just dribbled it off the end of the bat, and he rolled it out there. It was like 60 miles an hour exit velo. So we go first and third. Then they safety squeeze with Bradfield, gets another run in. Then there's a blooper up the middle to where Robert Moore just dove and jumped, and it missed his glove by about an inch. You know, once again, that ball was hit 67 miles an hour. It was a slider. It was a great pitch, and he just hit it off the end of the bat. And then he hit Spencer Jones hit a ground ball to second, or ground ball to short, 6-3 to end the inning. So that was four runs right there. The hardest hit ball was the first pitch fastball Spencer Jones hit to shortstop, 112 miles an hour. He hit that ball hard. But if you look at that inning, there really wasn't a bad pitch. You could say the Parker Nolan pitch was a bad pitch, but it really it was just a fastball away. Maybe it was elevated a little bit. It was belt high. But, you know, if it's down and it's got a little bite on it, it's ground ball. But, I mean, that's – I don't know. I saw – you see the four runs, you're like, wow, that sucks. But then you go back and really look at it, and it wasn't that bad of an inning. Now, I think the difference in Connor Friday, Matt, is he didn't have that put-away pitch. There were several – I don't even know how many hitters he had 1-2 counts on and just couldn't put them away. Now, part of that's a testament to a really good Vanderbilt lineup. Part of it is he just didn't have that slider, breaking ball, cutter that he could put a hitter away with. He just couldn't command that pitch. But other than that, you know, he battled back and ended up, I thought he threw some good pitches.
You know, I was there for the whole weekend, right?
Oh, I didn't think you were there Friday night. I'm sorry.
What's there? You need to come down to the press box and see me more often.
My bad.
The only time I wasn't at the press box was whenever I was trying to chase down Grant Harmon, who caught the raccoon. And by that point, he'd already been taken away for other reasons. And we'll talk about that here in a little bit. Let's talk about RPI, because this is something that obviously is a big story right now with Arkansas and whether or not they're going to be a top eight national seed. The polls all agree that Arkansas is one of the best teams in the country, one of the eight best. In fact, they might be in the top eight of all the polls. I'm not quite sure. I know that we go by the coaches poll, and they're number five in the coaches poll this week. But they seem to be a team that's kind of teetering on whether or not they're going to get one of those top eight national seeds. If you don't know what RPI is, it's kind of a calculation that's based on your record, based on the record of the teams you have played. There's a formula that's mixed into this that puts a lot of bearing on where you played teams. So, you know, if you beat a team at home, that's not as much as if you beat a team on the road. And then if you lose home games, it's going to hurt you in the RPI. When Arkansas lost to Vanderbilt last weekend, they dropped 9 spots in the RPI because there were 2 home losses. The thing that's hurting in Arkansas right now in the RPI most, Bubba, is the teams that they played in the midweek. You know, you begin with Arkansas Little Rock. Their RPI right now is number 188. UCA, 207. Arkansas State, 231. They played Nebraska Omaha earlier. That's number 199 RPI. And then you get down into the SWAC schools that they played. Grambling, number 281. UAPB, number 299. And that's out of 301 Division I teams. That's a lot of games right there. That's the majority of their midweek games that they played against RPI teams that are, you know, really, if they're not in the bottom third, they're right there almost in the bottom third. And you know, it kind of goes back to scheduling. I think that Dave Van Horn, probably reading between the lines of some of the comments that he's made, this last week or so, we're probably not going to see as many games against in-state teams based on what playing so many games against them this year has done to their RPI and what it potentially might do. I think they're still going to play all these teams, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're going to play them a lot less moving forward.
Well, it's a tough situation, man. I mean, and the thing about the RPI is you don't know when you play a team, you don't know that some of these teams are going to have such bad years when you put them on the schedule, you know, which really, you know, it ends up hurting you down the road. But, you know, I still say you look at where we're at, if we'll go to Bama and take care of business in Bama, I think that RPI is going to drop back down, maybe win a game or two in Hoover, and we're still hosting a super. But, you know, I understand the point of the in-state schools. I think it's really, for me as someone that coaches in-state and coaches a lot of these kids, I love the in-state games. Now, with that being said, do I want it to hurt our RPI? No way at all. You know, so hopefully we can figure out a happy medium between the two, but it's hard to get teams to come in and play us midweek. I mean, people, they don't want to come here and play the Razorbacks midweek, but I do think, I agree. I think there's probably going to be a few changes there where we don't play them all. We play them sporadically. Let's just put it that way.
You know, where I think it's hard to get teams to come in is in April, because there are certain teams, like say Illinois State, they're going to have to go on the road to get games in the first 3, 4, 5 weeks of the season, because the weather conditions at their home ballpark just make it to where they're not going to be able to play there in February or in early March. It's really late March when you see a lot of those teams able to play their first home games. What I've seen, though, is that those teams that go on the road early in the season, they are some of the ones who are less willing to go on the road late in the year, because they want to be able to get in their full complement of home games as well, whatever that, you know, that number is. It might be different at Illinois State, and it probably is, versus the, you know, 32, 35 home games that the Razorbacks want to get at Baum Walker every season. What I've seen in the last 3 or 4 years, though, since they began playing in-state schools, is that we have seen a lot fewer midweek games early in the season, Bubba. Say, like, you know, you don't see a midweek game anymore between the season opener and the second weekend, whereas you used to see those. And so I wouldn't be surprised maybe in the future if you see more midweek games early in the season, because that's when some of the teams are more willing to travel than in April. And where we've seen the last few years, Arkansas has really filled up that April schedule with Arkansas State, UCA, UAPB, and the teams from the state.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think the midweek games are really important. I wish we played more of them. You look at look at Will McIntyre. If it wasn't for a midweek game against UAPB, Will McIntyre may not have got the pitch this year. You look at Zach Morris. It took a midweek game to really get him going. Now he's one of our go-to guys, left-handed arms out of the pen. I mean, they're really important, but I think you're right. It's getting the right teams in here. And maybe, you know, if it's loading up a little bit more early in the year, you know, this year, you know, we could have really used those midweek games. I feel like we got some games canceled, you know, with weather and, you know, we lost a couple of those games, whether it hurt us or not RPI wise, who knows, but, you know, I really think you're right. I think there's going to be, you're going to see a little bit of a change going forward in how that looks, but I still say that, you know, we control our own destiny. You know, we go take care of business, you know, this weekend, and then in Hoover, we're still in good shape for a national seed. Now, let me ask you this though, Matt, I mean, you're big into the numbers. Do you like the RPI? Do you like the way it's calculated and how much weight they put on it? Because I'm not a big fan of it.
I think it's a crutch for the selection committee.
Okay, good.
I mean, what I think happens a lot of times, and I can't say this for certain because I don't know who the selection committee is, but I have a feeling that the selection committee is probably not watching as many games as they probably should. I think that, you know, they're certainly watching the conference tournaments. They're probably watching the last, you know, few weeks of the regular season more as the games become important. But I think that probably selection committees as a whole, and this isn't just baseball, but we're talking about baseball, and there's so many games with baseball that I think they're probably relying on some of these metrics like strength of schedule, RPI, you know, quadrant one, quadrant two, and so on, wins, more than they're relying on the eye test, because I just don't know that they're able to watch as many games as maybe say like the football selection committee is able to, because there's fewer games. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think baseball is such a different game. You know, you can look at a midweek game. Anyone can beat anyone on a midweek game. I just, you know, I look at the polls, and the polls all say that we're a top eight seed. And so in my mind, we're a top eight seed. I don't care what a computer says. You know, I care what people that know baseball, what they say.
Yeah, that's a good point. Illinois State's another team that's hurting Arkansas's RPI right now. That was a team that everybody thought that they were going to be a contender in the Missouri Valley Conference this year, and it just hasn't happened. They're 19-28, and they're number 175 in RPI. A couple of other RPI points, you know, losing to Missouri State at home, that's a big RPI hit. You were talking about the games that got canceled. That may have come out as a wash because, you know, one of them that got canceled was UALR here at home. If you win that, it doesn't help your RPI a whole lot. If you lose it, it really hurts your RPI. And then the other one was against Nebraska Omaha up at Kauffman Stadium. You do get a little bit extra boost for beating a team at a neutral site. It's kind of comes out as a wash if you lose to them at a neutral site. Although with Omaha being a team with a losing record, that could have hurt Arkansas had they lost that game in Kansas City. Let's talk about the top eight national seeds. You know, I heard a lot of people after the Vanderbilt series just making blanket statements, well, that's going to cost Arkansas a top eight seed. And I even wrote in my story after the game Sunday that it has the potential to hurt them as a top eight seed. But when you look around the country, it seems to me, Bubba, that there are two teams that stand out above everybody else. There's Tennessee and there's Oregon State. And those two have kind of been running 1-2 for most of the year. Virginia Tech looks like a really good team out of the ACC that's going to get a top eight national seed. After that, who are the other five? You know what I mean? Because you look at the rest of the country, and there are a lot of teams in that next rung that are kind of like Arkansas. Good teams, really good records, but really inconsistent. Oklahoma State got swept this weekend by Texas Tech in Stillwater. Miami is a team that a lot of people think is going to be in the running for a top eight seed. They lost at Florida State. Louisville, another team, they lost 2 of 3 against Virginia Tech. There were a lot of those types of series this last weekend. Oregon State even lost 2 of 3 to Arizona, which is not having a good year after Jay Johnson left and took all the players with him. There were a lot of teams that were in that boat this weekend. You know, LSU got swept by Ole Miss. There just really aren't a lot of teams that are stepping up and saying, you know, here I am, I'm one of the best teams in the country. You know, I think a lot of times this time of year, there are really about 5 or 6 teams that you can point to and say, yeah, that's definitely a top eight national seed. I don't know that there's more than about 3 of those teams right now. And so even though Arkansas is not playing its best baseball over the last month or so, I think that the teams that they're really competing with for one of those top eight seeds, there are a lot of teams that are in kind of that same boat, you know?
Absolutely. And thank you for saying that, Matt. Because I keep hearing some of these people, and I hear some of them on the interviews saying we've lost it. We're going to have to, you know, our only chance is to go to Hoover and win Hoover or win 3 in Hoover or you know, and to get the national seed. I just don't see it that way. Now, I don't know how much Hoover weighs in. You're really good at this. So let me ask you this question. Let's say we win 2 out of 3 at Bama. Mm-hmm. And we end up winning the West. Let's say, I think Ole Miss is hot right now. Yep. I really
That's
do.
Where A&M's got to go this weekend.
A&M's got to go to Ole Miss. Ole Miss is fighting right now. Their back's against the wall. I would not want to be playing Ole Miss this weekend. I said it when they came here on the Friday night. I said, how is this team this bad? Look at this lineup. But they're figuring it out. So let's say that happens. We win 2 out of 3. And Ole Miss takes 2 out of 3 from A&M. So we win the West. Where does that put us RPI wise? Is that enough to get us a top 8?
I would say not yet. Not, no, I think that there would, and again, it has to do so much with what other teams are doing. You know, what happens with Oklahoma State, what happens with Louisville, Miami, some of these teams. Beating Alabama at Alabama would help Arkansas's RPI. If you could sweep at Tuscaloosa, that's going to do wonders for your RPI, because road wins and neutral site wins are worth so much more to the RPI than home wins are. And on the flip side, road losses and neutral site losses are not worth as much. You know, they don't ding your RPI as much as a home loss would. And so from an RPI perspective, you know, there's still a lot that Arkansas can do to improve its RPI over the last couple of weeks. You know, like I said, if they could go to Alabama and somehow sweep them this weekend, I think that would be huge. And it wouldn't surprise me if they do it, Bubba, given, you know, kind of where they are in terms of people doubting them. We're going to talk about this later, what Dave Van Horn teams seem to do when they get on the road after classes end. So, you know, I think that the best thing for Arkansas is that if you can go to Tuscaloosa, obviously win the series, a sweep would be great. Go down to Hoover, at least have a couple of wins at Hoover. That, in my mind, puts them at what? That would be at least four, maybe five wins. That's a 42-win team out of the SEC that would potentially be a division champion. I don't see how you keep that team from being a top eight RPI team unless there's five or six teams that just really get hot. So that's the best case scenario for them. And then, you know, a lot of it has to do, I think, too, with what teams they get to play in Hoover. You know, if they can go to Hoover and they get maybe a rematch with Vanderbilt and could potentially beat Vanderbilt, or say they get to play a Tennessee or a Texas A&M again and beat one of those teams, you know, then that's a huge feather in your cap. I still think there's a lot out there for this team in terms of RPI, and it can really improve over these last couple of weeks. Now, it can, you know, they can get hurt too if they were to go to Tuscaloosa and lay an egg and not play well in Hoover. Remember, Mississippi State last year, I think that almost cost them a national seed, one of those top eight seeds, when they went to Hoover and they got run ruled twice. They ended up getting one of the top eight seeds and they were able to, you know, go on that great run through the postseason. But it'll be really interesting to see what happens here over the next couple of weeks.
Well, you know, you talk about Mississippi State. I remember last year after they got swept, watching one of the SEC shows, and I don't remember who it was, saying that they pretty much said it cost them. And then, you know, they ended up getting it, and then, you know, the rest is history. They ended up winning it all. But, you know, I think we got I like our chances this weekend at Alabama. But if you look, they played Auburn at Auburn, two really close games. They lost 3-2 and 6-4. Didn't get a chance to play the third game. But then, you know, they also got swept by South Carolina a few weeks ago. They lost 2 out of 3 to LSU. So you just don't know right now. And I think Dave said it too. And in the SEC, you just don't know right now. There's so much parity, you know, and it goes back to every pitch, every play, everything matters in the course of a baseball game. But I think if we go down there and play good baseball, and I really like the fact, look, you know, a lot of people are down on our offense. We've come back from 5-0 on Friday night a couple of weekends, and that's hard to do. I'm one of those that I don't think we're ever out of the game, you know, except Sunday. I went into the last inning, seventh inning Sunday, and that's one of the first times I've ever thought to myself, we're done. You know, down 5-0, and the dude was dealing on the mound. I just had a bad feeling there. But for the most part, Matt, I'm one of those that says we're never out of it. I know these guys in the lineup, and I know what they're capable of. So, you know, a sweep would be hard in Bama, but I think we can go down there and do it. And I think our starting pitching, I liked some of the stuff I saw about Hagan. You know, they made a little adjustment mechanical. Hagan was back up, you know, 93, 94 miles an hour after being 88, 89 the week before, topping out at 90. You know, so I see so many, you know, I'm looking through Razorback goggles at times, but I think I'm a realist. I think we can go down there and take 2 out of 3 and possibly sweep them.
Going back to the tournament talk, and I'm talking about NCAA tournament, I think a lot of it is going to have to do with what is the perception of the SEC. You and I have talked about this a few times this year, that the perception of the SEC, I think by many, is that it's down this year because Ole Miss isn't what Ole Miss usually is. Vanderbilt, Mississippi State's obviously having a really bad year. But if you look at it, Bubba, the SEC, if the season ended today, would get 9 teams in the NCAA tournament. they got nine teams in the NCAA tournament last year. I think the difference would be that last year, well, they have seven teams that hosted a regional. You might only have four teams that host a regional this year. And so that might be the big difference, maybe five teams, depending on if Vanderbilt or LSU can get into the hosting conversation. I think LSU probably lost out on a host by getting swept by Ole Miss last week. What's the perception of the SEC from the selection committee? Because what I see from the SEC right now is that usually you have two, three, maybe four teams. Last year it was four teams that set themselves apart from everybody else. And you knew those were the two or three, four great teams in the league. There's one of those teams this year. And then there's a lot of teams, the next five, six teams are kind of beating up on each other. But if you took Arkansas out of conference, or you took Texas A&M out of conference, or Vanderbilt, or maybe even LSU or Georgia, and you put them up against another team, you would say, hey, I think that team's got a chance to win two of three against Oregon State, Virginia Tech. And so I think the league is still really strong. What I see this year is that maybe instead of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 beating up on each other, it's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 are the teams that are beating up on each other. And it gives the league a perception that it might not be as strong as it usually is.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Matt. And you know, I think you look at Vandy this weekend. They're 500 in the conference, and they're really good. I mean, they're a good team. They're as good as any team that I've seen play this year. Now, I haven't got to see some of these other Virginia Tech, Stanford, Texas. I've seen Tech play, but I haven't seen Oklahoma State. There's some of these teams I haven't seen play, but I know good baseball when I see it, and I know good baseball players when I see it. I know good pitching when I see it. And I look at some of these teams, and they're good. They're really good. I think Auburn's really good. And I agree with what you said. I think that we're just kind of beating up on each other, and I think the perception is down. And I don't know if the selection committee, how they look at it, if they're tired of seeing SEC teams constantly, you know, hosting. I have no idea if there's a bias there or not. I have no idea, but I know there's a lot of really good baseball teams in the SEC right now with average. they've got average records, but they're teams that when you put them in somewhere as a two seed, they're probably going to go walk through that regional.
I think it's kind of like SEC football last year. People saw that Auburn and LSU weren't as good, and maybe it overshadowed the fact that you had great teams at Arkansas, Ole Miss, and some other places. The Whole Hog Baseball Podcast is sponsored by Massage Envy, voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Visit Mike and his staff in Tuscany Square at 2603 West Pleasant Grove Road in Rogers, or in Fayetteville at 3557 North Shiloh Drive. Massage Envy has services for everyone. MassageEnvy.com.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's best day spa and best massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
You know it never goes out of style? A great burger. And for a long time now, the best burgers around have been made at CJ's Butcher Boy. I've been stopping at their Russellville location for years to enjoy a double with bacon, cheese, and all the fixings. Well, the fries are always made fresh, and their shakes are made with real premium ice cream. And now that CJ's Butcher Boy has a Fayetteville location too on Weddington, you can bet I'll be there a lot more. CJ's Butcher Boy in Russellville and Fayetteville. When all you do are burgers, they have to be the best.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Now let's look at this week in the SEC, presented by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers.
Bubba and I mentioned a minute ago the SEC teams are beating up on each other. It was that case again last week. Ole Miss sweeps LSU in Baton Rouge. Tennessee wins two of three against Georgia. That, coupled with Arkansas's loss on Friday night gave the Volunteers the SEC regular season championship, their first regular season title in 27 years. Texas A&M struggled some with Mississippi State, but ended up sweeping the Bulldogs, won all three of the games in College Station. Auburn won both games it played against Alabama. They did not play their finale because of some weather and travel issues. And so that could play a factor in the SEC West standings. We'll talk about that here a little bit in just a moment. South Carolina beat Kentucky 2 of 3, and Florida defeated Missouri 2 of 3. I thought it was a really neat moment last week, Bubba. I don't know if you got a chance to see Mike Bianco's comments after they beat LSU in the finale, but he got to go out before the game and stand with his son, Drew, who's a senior at LSU. And it's just kind of a neat moment. You know, Mike Bianco's got the history with LSU. He played there. He was an assistant coach there under Skip Bertman. Of course, a lot of people thought he might get that job last season after Paul Maneri resigned. Just kind of an emotional moment for him when he talked about all the things that he has to miss from his kids, and to be able to be there and stand on his son with senior day. I just thought that was a really neat deal.
No, it was neat. I didn't get to see the interview. I saw him out on the field together though. And it was kind of a cool moment to see him out there with his son. And but I didn't get to see any of the interview.
SEC West standings going into the final week. We mentioned Arkansas and A&M are both tied at 17-10. A&M's kind of been creeping up on Arkansas a little bit. And now they've got that head-to-head tiebreaker, Bubba, because they won in College Station. But this week, it's going to be really interesting, because if you look at the matchups, Arkansas's got the more favorable matchup this week. Both of them are on the road. Arkansas plays Alabama, who's really been fading over the last half of the conference season. And A&M's got to go to Oxford and play a surging Ole Miss team.
I think that definitely favors the Razorbacks. But boy, you look back, Matt, at a couple of those one-run losses we had at A&M, and if we could have just had one of those back. But you know, once again, that's baseball. You can look at the whole season and say, wow, this right here, boy, it'd have been nice to have that win and this win, or how about that base hit right there where the base is loaded? There's so many things you can look back at. But I wouldn't want to be in A&M's position right now. I really wouldn't. I would not want to be going to Oxford having to play Ole Miss right now, because they're on a roll. They're playing. I think they're finally figuring it out. You know, we knew that they were a good team, but I think they're finally figuring out their pitching staff, and then their hitters are finally starting to roll a little bit. So it's, not a good place for A&M to have to finish out the conference season.
Auburn and LSU are both still alive to potentially win the division. LSU, the best they could do is to tie for the division. They would have to sweep this weekend, and they would need Arkansas and A&M to lose all their games. They would also need Auburn to lose some games this weekend. Auburn, by not playing Alabama last week, creates a really interesting set of scenarios, because now all of a sudden it takes away that three-way tie, because Auburn's going to have one less game that's counting toward its record. It's kind of like last year, if you remember, Tennessee lost its series to Vanderbilt, but late in the year, Vanderbilt had to cancel a game. I think it was against Alabama. And so Vanderbilt, even though it had won the series against Tennessee, and even though they had the same number of losses, Tennessee had one more win than Vanderbilt, and so they win the East by a half game. You've got that same type of scenario that could come into play this weekend potentially with Auburn if they play well enough at Kentucky, and if Arkansas and A&M have some struggles in their series.
It's crazy to think that could happen. But you know what? I was thinking before our Sunday game versus Vandy, I'm like, okay, we actually talked about it in the booth for a while off the air. It's like, okay, do we want to play this game? And I'm like, hell yeah, let's play. We got a freshman on the mound. We got Jackson Wiggins. I know Jackson's going to have a good game. We're playing a 7-inning game. We got Evan Taylor, Brady Tiger, fresh in the bullpen. Let's play. But had we not played that game, that would have probably benefited us a whole lot more. But it's crazy how it comes down, you know, and DVH called this a long time ago, how it would come down to the last series. And he's so right.
A lot of SEC West scenarios. You know, I went through so many last week that I had Bubba's head spun in knots. But the easiest one this weekend to say, Bubba, is that if Arkansas wins its series against Alabama, and if A&M loses its series against Ole Miss, Arkansas would be the outright SEC West champions. And then also, you know, if Arkansas and A&M tie for the SEC West, Arkansas is still a division champion. It's just that A&M would have the tiebreaker for the seeding purposes in Hoover next week. Arkansas, a lot of these SEC West championships they have, they've been split SEC West championships. In fact, I think last year was the first outright SEC West championship that they had had since 2004. They've had a lot of division championships under Van Horn where they've been split championships. And, you know, to me, I don't think it really matters if it's a split championship. If you finish at the top of the division, you finish at the top of the division, and that's a really good division championship year.
Oh, absolutely. When you're talking SEC West baseball, if you're splitting it or winning it outright, I mean, winning it's winning it, because you look at, I mean, you look at the gauntlet you've got to go through. I mean, week in and week out, I mean, it's tough. So to be where we're at, I mean, yeah, it's a win. It's a win in my book for sure. Now, with that being said, I want to go to Alabama and sweep them or win it outright. A win's a win. And I look more into the overall picture of getting that top eight seed. You know, yeah, we want to win the West, obviously, but I want these wins because I want to get that RPI down. I want to have a top eight seed to be hosting a super regional. You know, with that being said, we still got to get through a regional, but I like our chances. Anytime we're at Paul Walker, I think we're in good shape.
Part of why getting that top eight seed is such a big deal for Arkansas. If the season ended right now, Missouri and Mississippi State would be the two teams that didn't make it to Hoover, but there are still other teams, Kentucky and Alabama most notably, that could potentially not get there. And so you talk about Arkansas going to Tuscaloosa and Arkansas having a lot to play for. Alabama's got a lot to play for too, because if, you know, they don't win games this weekend and some things happen at other sites, then all of a sudden this could be it for Alabama. There is no next week.
That's the scary part about it. And like I said, I referred to their scores last week at Auburn. They lost a couple of close games. And so, you know, Alabama's not going to go just lay down. I mean, they've got good players. They've got some veteran players. So, you know, they're going to be up for the challenge. And, you know, I just think if we go in there and play Razorback baseball, we can come out with a series win.
This week's games, we mentioned A&M's at Ole Miss. Missouri is at Georgia this week. Auburn is at Kentucky. A lot of eyes will be on that one in terms of the SEC West race. Tennessee goes to Mississippi State. South Carolina is at Florida. LSU's at Vanderbilt. And, of course, Arkansas is at Alabama. SEC teams in the coaches poll this week. Tennessee's number one again. Arkansas number five. Texas A&M's up to number 11. Auburn is number 18. Vanderbilt moved up two spots to number 19 after that series win in Fayetteville. And then rounding out the top 25, LSU kind of surprisingly held on to a ranked position. They're number 24, and Georgia is number 25. The SEC report's brought to you by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers, the best burger in two towns. Visit the original at 2803 North Arkansas Avenue in Russellville, or the newest location at 3484 West Weddington Drive in Fayetteville, just minutes from Baumwalker Stadium. You can skip the line and order online or download the app in your app store. CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers, when all you do are burgers, they have to be the best. And Bubba, we've mentioned the SEC this year and, you know, just kind of how it hasn't been the type of season that a lot of people thought it might be when you look at all the teams they had in the top 10. I think there might have been six SEC teams in the top 10 of the preseason poll, a lot of other ranked teams. What has surprised you the most from the SEC as we go into the final weekend versus maybe your view on the conference 10, 12 weeks ago?
Well, my biggest surprise was seeing Ole Miss and Mississippi State at the bottom, to be honest with you, bottom of the SEC West. Now Ole Miss has crept up a little bit, but you still got Mississippi State at 9-18. I would have never thought that. I knew going in Tennessee was going to be good, and I expected Tennessee and Vanderbilt to be at the top of the East. But you look at the West, and you know, it's just crazy to see, you know, Ole Miss and Mississippi State down at the bottom for, you know, majority of the season. That's kind of the biggest surprise for me. And I'll say one other thing, Matt, sorry to cut you off. A&M, you know, with Schlossnagel going there, you know, he's a good coach and he's got a good track record. I'm surprised he's able to get A&M on track as quick as he did. It took them a while. They got off to a slow start, but they're putting it together now at kind of the right time.
Yeah, I was going to say the midseason turnaround by A&M has been one of the things that stood out to me. I think the late season surge that we're seeing from Vanderbilt and Ole Miss is something that kind of stands out. But, you know, the thing that really I think has surprised me the most this year has centered around pitching and really Tennessee's pitching. I thought Tennessee was going to be really good offensively. It took me a long time to really buy in and believe in their pitching staff. You know, they went out last year. They got Chase Dollander, and that's been a huge addition to their pitching staff. You know, to Tony Vitello and Frank Anderson's credit, they've really built up a really good army of arms, whether it be starters or relief pitchers. And so the fact that Tennessee has pitched so well has been surprising to me. You know, I thought if Tennessee was going to win this year, it was going to have to be a team that won a lot of games, say like 10-8. But the fact that they can be just as comfortable winning games that are 3-1 or 2-0, that's really been a surprise to me.
Well, yeah, I knew they were going to be good. I think I want to say at one point they were like 20-1. And I'm pretty sure I said on the podcast, well, you know, they still haven't played anybody. You know, let's wait till they start playing real teams, because they kind of played a weak schedule in the beginning. And I knew they were good, but like you said, I didn't know they were going to be that good. I didn't expect their pitching staff to do what they did. I knew they were going to score a lot of runs though. So yeah, that's a big surprise the way they're shutting teams down. And, you know, if they need to win a close game, they can win it a low scoring one, or if they need to outslug you, they can do that as well.
You know, we've talked a lot about, we've mentioned a player and we've said, hey, that might be the SEC player of the year. We mentioned that with Jacob Berry when LSU came in. We mentioned it when Arkansas went down to Auburn and played and saw Sonny DeShera a couple of weeks ago. I don't think he can be the player of the year, but there has not been a player that I have been more impressed by than Enrique Bradfield from Vanderbilt. And it was the first time to be able to see him in person. I didn't get to go down in Hoover and see him in person when they played in the SEC tournament last year when he was a freshman. But to see his speed in person and to see the way he swings a bat in person, this just looks to me, Bubba, like it's a player that once he gets into the minors, he's going to be on a fast track to the big leagues, because there just are not a whole lot of players that I've seen come through that are like him.
It's amazing how he can change the game, Matt. It really is. And, you know, I asked Matt Hobbs Friday night before the game, I said, can Enrique Bradfield hit? Because I watched him last year, and to me, it was more of like a handsy kind of a slap the guy or slap the ball and run. I didn't see him as a true force at the plate, like a threat at the plate. I thought he had a lot of holes in his swing. And Matt's like, yeah, absolutely. The guy can hit, you know, and, you know, I don't want to quote Matt Hobbs exactly. You know, I don't know exactly what he said, but he's like, you know, guy playing the big leagues basically. But you look at the weekend, he was 8-for-12 with 6 stolen bases. And I had said going in, I said, I can't wait to see him on first base with Connor Nolan on the mound and Michael Turner behind the plate, because Connor Nolan does a great job. He's got quick feet. He does a great job of holding runners close. He does a good job of getting the ball home to the catcher quick, you know, 1-1, 1-2 range. And sure enough, I got a chance to see that happen, Matt. And I'll tell you, Connor Nolan, probably, I want to say I had him at a 1-2 to the plate. Perfect pitch to throw on. Michael Turner got a fastball, got rid of it quick, put it right on the bag of one hopper to Robert Moore, and it wasn't even close at second. Now, I don't have the pop time for Michael Turner. It was probably, you know, I don't know, a 1-9, maybe a 2. I don't know, but he got rid of it quick, got it down there. It wasn't even close. And so, I mean, the guy is just amazing on the bases. He stole third base a couple of times against us where he timed up the pitchers. And it just – he wreaks havoc when he gets on the base. But then, you know, not only that, I mean, he just finds a way. He laid down a safety squeeze at a big point in the game. He hit the 3-run homer in the 10th inning, you know, which is just a great at-bat. You know, hit a curveball down and in. Now – you know, you can debate this all day. Should we have let Enrique Bradfield beat us in the 10th inning? You know, if you put him on and then Diaz walks or gets a base hit, you're like, well, why'd you walk him? You were ahead 1-2. You know, you can second guess it, you know, all day, but the guy is an unbelievable player. And I'll be honest with you, he is way better in person than I thought he was going to be. And he really did change that series this weekend.
We had one of the listeners to our podcast say something the other day. And he said that Bradfield reminded him of some of the great base stealers of the 1980s. And some of the names that he mentioned were Willie McGee, Vince Coleman, Ricky Henderson, Tim Raines, Willie Wilson, Ozzie Smith. How, you know, I know you probably grew up watching a lot of those players, Bubba. How good of a comparison is that to Bradfield?
I think it's great. And you know what's funny is during the rain delay, Matt Zimmerman came up in the booth and he compared him to Willie McGee. He said, does he not remind you of Willie McGee? And he's got a lot of the same mannerisms, kind of the same walk. I remember watching Willie McGee play and the dude was super fast. But when you watch him walk, he was like a sloth. And, you know, I saw that out of Bradfield this weekend. He'd foul a ball off and boy, he would just walk real slow back down the first baseline. Like he was just wore out. But boy, then. And when he hits the ball, I mean, he's on go and he's just 100 miles an hour. But that's a great comparison. I was impressed with Zimmerman for making that comparison. Same number, jersey number too, 51. But, you know, Willie McGee was a great player, could change a game. And that's how Enrique Bradfield was. I mean, it was so impressive to watch him this weekend. And he just, the thing I like, he grinds out at bats. He doesn't give away an at bat. Now, if you throw one down the middle first pitch, he's going to hammer it. If not, he's selective. I saw him swing at one bad pitch. Evan Taylor made him chase a slider down and away. Was the only bad pitch I think he swung at all weekend. Other than that, I mean, he was on time with everything.
A really random observation, by the way, talking about that jersey number. Have you ever noticed how at Vanderbilt, it seems like their best players always wear the most odd jersey numbers? I mean, you've got Bradfield wears 51. Remember J.J. Blade, I think he wore number 51. Kumar Rocker, I think he was 88. It seems like, you know, they had all these relief pitchers coming in wearing double numbers, whether it be 22 or 77 or 88 or 99. I don't know that I've ever seen that from a baseball team. It's like whatever the most popular numbers are elsewhere, Vanderbilt's going to go the opposite of that.
Well, they do a lot of things that's opposite. And I wasn't going to bring this up, but to your point about the numbers, I haven't really noticed that. But I'm sorry, that crap they do down the left field line between innings wears me out. It disgusts me. I get so mad every inning when I watch that.
You've got to explain it for people who aren't at the game and can't see that.
Okay, so if you weren't there and you didn't see it, so – you know, when you first look at it, you know, I want to say my wife even referred to it. Oh, it's cute how they go out there in the left field and they stretch in between innings as a team. And I'm like, well, no, it's not cute. It's choreographed eye service is what that is. They go down there and they lay down and, you know, one inning they might do like Simon Says, and they'll imitate one guy. The next time they're doing some choreographed thing where they're holding a guy's legs up and one guy jumps through his legs. It's just, it almost looked like picture synchronized swimming out in left field between innings. That's a lot of the crap that they do. And it's just all me, eye service. I can't believe Tim Corbin allows that because he seems like an old school guy. Now they're a great baseball team, but having to watch that every inning for three games just absolutely wore me out. And my fun meter by the end of it was on zero and I just couldn't take it anymore. I just wanted to throw up in my mouth every inning when I had to watch it. So I got that off my chest, Matt. I feel way better now. Thank you.
It's basically calisthenics, right?
Yeah. It's crazy. Some of the stuff they do, and it has nothing. It's nothing to do with getting loose. It's all eye service. It's straight eye service.
Well, hey, so when the raccoon got into the stadium Friday night, did you notice it?
No, I did not until I want to say Brett Dolan on the SEC Network texted me. And then I started getting pictures coming in. I had no idea what was going on. When I've got my headset on, I can't hear a lot of what's going on in the stadium. But then, you know, we started getting pictures sent to it. I want to say my daughter, Jordan, sent me a picture. And it was actually a friend she went to high school with. But that was incredible. I've never seen anything like that. I grew up in Winslow, Arkansas, so I know how mean a raccoon can be. Uh-huh. They used to break into our chicken houses. We used to catch them in traps because they would break into our chicken. I can't imagine grabbing a raccoon by the scruff of the neck and thinking, oh, this is cool.
Well, you know, if you listen to him talk, and I mentioned this earlier, I went down and tried to find him after all of this had happened, and I guess he got taken away to get rabies shots because he got bit by the raccoon. But from what the people around me were saying, and then I think I heard him say something or allude to this on one of the interviews that he did, is that basically this raccoon had been running up and down the aisles. And so it wasn't like, you know, he just saw it, hey, let me pick up this. This was something where, you know, it was kind of, I don't know if it was terrorizing the fans, but it had become a real big distraction at that point in the stadium, or, you know, in that area in the stadium. I'll tell you, from where I was sitting, you know, when you're at a game, you can kind of tell when there's a commotion somewhere because people, you know, start looking, and then it kind of becomes almost like the wave, you know, everybody's turning around looking at that direction. And so where that happened was where the Vanderbilt tickets for Vanderbilt's players' families are. And I thought that there was some sort of, you know, like disturbance between the Arkansas fans and maybe the Whistler, because one of their Whistlers had made the trip to the game. And then, you know, it was only later that I saw that, you know, all the raccoon pictures. Have you ever seen anything like that at a baseball game, though?
No, I have not. And
you know, I know, you like know, seen the possum at an Arkansas game, and that groundhog ran out on the field during the game last year. But to actually see a raccoon in the stands where people are, you know, so closely sitting, you know, tightly together, I don't know that I've ever seen anything like that.
Well, it's funny because, you know, in that section, there's a buddy of mine. I played baseball in Hawaii back in the day with winter ball. Yankees sent me out to Hawaii to play winter ball, which was really nice. So Devin Futrell's dad, Mark Futrell, it was sitting right there in that section. And I ended up talking to him later, and he couldn't believe it. He's like, oh, my gosh, this is Arkansas. This guy, Mark, he lives in Miami Beach. So he's not used to that. You don't see a lot of raccoons running around Miami Beach, I guess, but he couldn't believe that this had happened. And I told him, I said, hey, this Grant Armand dude's my new hero, you know, to grab that raccoon. He's like, I couldn't believe it. And it's funny when you see the background, you see the Vanderbilt bullpen in the background. Yes. Those guys are in shock, and it's just hilarious.
Well, I wanted to mention that too, because I think Vanderbilt, they don't recruit from towns like Winslow. They recruit more from towns like Miami. And so I have a feeling that the players had never really ever seen anything like that. They had to be thinking, where the hell are we?
I know, but okay, here's what really sucks. You want to know what sucks worse about the whole thing is that we didn't win that game. Yeah. If we win that game, we've got rally raccoons all over the plate. It's probably the number one selling animal in the state.
It have raccoon hats game. Next to the beer hats.
Oh, yes. That's what I told Phil in the air. I said, we're all gonna be wearing raccoon hats next year for the rally cap. But you know, it was funny. You know, the guy was got his 15 minutes of fame. He was on the SEC network. I saw him on rally cap on Sunday night. And it was funny the way he described it. He said, you know, he could see this raccoon run up down the aisle. And he said, you know what? My inner redneck kind of kicked in. And next thing you know, I'm grabbing him by the scruff of the neck and holding him up. But he's videoing the whole thing, which is, that's crazy to me. I mean, life in 2022, you grab a giant 30-pound raccoon and you think to do a selfie with him at the same time you're holding him. I don't know. It's just times have changed.
Would you pick up a raccoon?
I tell you, if it was running up and down the aisle and I thought maybe it was going to get my wife and kids, I might have grabbed it. But I wouldn't have thought to get my phone out and video me grabbing it. I would have grabbed him and thought, I got to get rid of this thing in a hurry. But other than that, no, if one runs by right now in my yard, no, I'm going to let him go. I got a shotgun for that, though. Don't tell PETA.
You've spent a lot more time at baseball stadiums than anybody else probably listen to this podcast. What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen at a baseball game?
That's it. That's it. Without a doubt, seeing a guy grab a raccoon by the scruff of the neck and hold it up and walk out of the stadium. I don't think I can top that. I really don't. It's amazing to me. And I've watched that video 100 times and I laugh every time I watch it. I've watched multiple views of it, and every view just kills. I can't quit watching it.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Great therapists and estheticians go along with a new service that I am truly excited about. Rapid Tension Relief uses a special tool that will melt the tension and soreness away. Trust me, you will not be disappointed in the results. I highly recommend this feature along with a total body stretch assisted stretch program. Whether you are competing at a high level or just want to relax, these services are for everyone. Massage, rapid tension relief, total body stretch, deep muscle treatment massage, you choose. Or you can try any combination of those. So the next time you're feeling tight, make sure to call my friends at Massage Envy.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports video on demand app.
Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Grease Pig, this is Mike.
Coming in hot, so I could just stay in my vehicle during my oil change?
That's right. The Grease Pig wants to help keep you safe, so now you can stay in your vehicle during your oil change.
These guys are working like a pig crew.
That's part of our 17-point inspection, where we check your belts and hoses, we check and fill all your fluids, and offer full repair on all vehicles. And, of course, we use Castrol products.
Why do I smoke coffee?
You know our waiting room is still open.
And give up front row seats to my own oil change? No, thank you. You're doing awesome. Mike, I think I'm making them uncomfortable.
Get into the Grease Pig, your local automotive specialist for over 20 years.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Let's take a look at the week ahead, presented by Grease Pig.
Arkansas and Alabama will play three games this week at Sewell Thomas Stadium in Tuscaloosa. First game Thursday night at 6 o'clock. That'll be on SEC Network Plus. On Friday, it'll be a 7 o'clock first pitch on the SEC Network. And on Saturday, the regular season finale for both teams, a 1 o'clock first pitch on SEC Network Plus. By the way, that game on Saturday, that's been a new game time versus what was originally listed. The SEC Network has flex scheduling that allows for games that are going to factor into the division standings to be put on television for the final week. They leave their television schedule open. And so that second game of the Arkansas-Alabama series was added to SEC Network late. The week ahead is brought to you by the Grease Pig. For 20 years, they have specialized in serving UA students, faculty, and staff with two locations in Fayetteville on College Avenue and MLK Boulevard. The Grease Pig has experience for all your repair needs and, of course, complete service oil changes staffed with ASE-certified master technicians. They also provide tires and alignment services at their location on College Avenue. The Grease Pig, it's all about taking care of you and a proud supporter of the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Bubba, we mentioned this is a big series for Alabama this weekend. They're 27-24 overall, but just 10-16 in the SEC. They've really faded. You know, we were talking maybe 4 or 5 weeks back how Alabama was right there with Arkansas and Auburn in the SEC West race. Alabama's fallen back, probably, you know, more in line with what people thought they were going to be before the season. But I just think that anytime you play a team in the SEC, it doesn't matter if it's Missouri or Kentucky or Alabama, Mississippi State's at the bottom of the league this year. Anybody can beat anybody on any given weekend. And I think that's part of what makes the SEC fun. And I think Arkansas's got to bring their A game to Tuscaloosa. You know, there's not going to be any back down from the Crimson Tide just because they're the back end of a disappointing season.
No, you're right. And, you know, if you look at the batting averages of both teams are really similar. ERA, you know, Razorbacks have a huge advantage ERA wise. But, you know, like you said, Matt, anything can happen. And we're going to Bama and they're kind of fighting for their life, you know, hoping to get NCAA or get into the SEC tournament. So, you know, it's not going to be an easy task for us. Let's just put it that way.
We talked earlier this year about how college players remember. And, you know, one of the big moments in last season's run for Arkansas was the fact that they got their tails whipped by Alabama the first SEC game of the season. They lost it 16-1. And when Van Horn was earlier this year, you know, those comments that got so much attention about, you know, he's no fun, he doesn't like fun. It was clearly that Alabama opener that he was talking about, the whooping and hollering. And I wonder how much you think that the players remember that and whether or not you think that there's, I don't know if bad blood is the right word, but just how much the players remember last year's series and how that may factor into what we see this weekend.
Well, I will say as a player, you remember stuff like that. You absolutely remember it. And I love everything about what Dave Van Horn said when he had that press conference. But, you know, the players remember that. Now, with that being said, I'm sure the Bama guys remember it as well, how we flipped the page there and beat down on them the next two games. But, you know, that's just one of those things. You just you don't forget. Let's just say that, Matt, when you're going into there, now we're going to their place. And, you know, it's one of those things that guys have it in the back of their mind.
We heard Dave Van Horn say during game three against Auburn that he let the players get a little chirpy and that he liked the energy that they showed that day. Do you think they, You know, I've heard people talk about this team doesn't play loose enough, that they play too buttoned up and businesslike. I mean, do you think they let it loose a little bit this week? Or do you think those characterizations of this team are incorrect?
Yeah, I think it's incorrect because, you know, I've got a pretty good view into the dugout. I'll watch the guys during the games and look, they're, it's a close-knit group, it looks like to me. I watch them during batting practice. I think Dave Van Horn's style of baseball is the right way to play the game. They don't play stiff, but it's business. Like, they go out and they take care of business and they play the game the right way and they respect it. But you know what, if Dave feels like, you know, that they need to turn them loose a little bit, he'll let it go. And it was the same back in the day with Norm DeBryant. You know, there were certain times where he'd say, okay, you know, he'd let us get away with a little bit more. But it was kind of predicated off of what that other team was doing. And, you know, if he thought maybe we were flat, okay, let's get it going, boys, you know, every once in a while. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that as long as you do it the right way.
Arkansas's on the road. They're typically on the road this weekend. And a lot of people have wondered why in the past. Why is Arkansas typically finished the season away from Fayetteville? And the way it's always been explained to me, it has to do with final exam schedules, that the SEC wants a team at home on the week that follows their final exams, you know, because typically you're taking exams on that Friday leading up to a Friday night game. And so Arkansas had its final exams last week before the Vanderbilt series. And so they go on the road. Last year was different because of some kind of quirks with the calendar, and so they were able to finish the year with Florida. But most often it's this way where they get the exams out, they need to go on the road, and then they go on to Hoover. And Bubba, I've observed a lot of times with Van Horn's teams that he gets them away from Fayetteville after classes are over, and there's something that happens on that final weekend that they don't always win the series. You know, they lost the series, I think, at Georgia in 2018. I think they lost a series in College Station in 2019. But a lot of times I've seen where he's taken teams away from Fayetteville, got them on the road, and then they go from wherever their regular season finale is, they go to Hoover. And it just seems to me like there's like this magic sauce that Dave Van Horn and his coaches have found on this weekend in a lot of past seasons and then going into Hoover. And that builds a lot of momentum going into regional play. And you've got that potential again this weekend. Some, you know, I mean, I was looking at this earlier, some of the series that I remember, the 2012 team, I think, was kind of scuffling along, and then they went to Tennessee, got hot, had a nice week in Hoover. The 2015 team, kind of a similar deal. They went to Georgia and, you know, they go through the postseason, they get to the World Series. We've just seen this with some of these College World Series teams, that this is a big weekend, I feel like, to whatever potential run they could have in June.
I think so, Matt. And, you know, I think so, you call it the magic sauce, but whatever it is, you know, DVH has a good feel of, you know, I say a good coach can coach a player from the inside out. He kind of has a good feel for what's inside players and how to get the most out of them. And I think he's got a good feel for that. And I think a lot of times he gets them away from Fayetteville. You know, everything's pretty structured when they're on the road, but I think they go there and they have a good time. I think their batting practices are a little more loose, but still when the game starts, they flip that switch and they go out there and they take care of business. And I don't know what it is exactly that Dave does different with them, but I know that it in the past it's worked. And I still think some people are down on the team and they're down on the offense. I'm not. I think we're in a good shape. We control our own destiny. And I still like this team, and I think we've got the potential when everything eventually clicks. And I know we're getting late in the year, but I still say it's going to click. I love our lineup. I look at these guys 1 through 9. I look at some of the guys on the bench. I know what they're capable of. I know how hard they work. And I just hope, you know, I hope it comes together for them, you know, this weekend in Bama, and then on into Hoover, and then, you know, obviously into the regional after that.
And we talked about this early in the year, that the SEC schedule was really beneficial for this team, and that they got to play some of those bad teams early in the year where maybe they could work some of the kinks out. They run into four teams the last four weekends: A&M, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, and Auburn, who all seem to be playing really, really well at the end of the season. And, you know, one of the things to something you were talking about a second ago, I talked to Nate Thompson last week, and I wrote this on our site, and I just pulled up this quote. He said, quote, "We've talked all season about how everything that happens to us, whether it's something enjoyable or not, is for our benefit if we choose for it to be. It's a learning opportunity and something we can use to enhance our performance at the end. I think a lot of those experiences that we've been going through are things that we're trying to use now to be at our best. And I think that it's going to help them in the postseason potentially. Now, they could go into the postseason, they may go 0-2, but I think that they have been through a lot of tough things this year that's going to help them in the postseason that maybe some of these postseason teams haven't seen.
Well, I agree 100%, Matt. I take and losing the series is bad. You know, it sucked losing this weekend to Vandy, but I think it sucked for the guys to watch Vandy out there on the field. First of all, they see that stuff they do between innings, and it's got to annoy them. I didn't talk to the players about it. There's more important things to talk about, but you know, I know it bugs them and to lose that series, but I think Nate Thompson's right. I mean, everything you lose, you learn more from losing than you do from winning. Mm-hmm. And some of these little things they've added up over the course of a season. And I just think we're picking up steam. And I know it doesn't seem like it because we just lost the series, but I think we're picking up steam. I love our bullpen. I think we got some guys in the bullpen that come out of there, you know, breathing fire, and they want the ball in a crucial situation. You know, I think we got a lot of hitters in the lineup that want to be the guy up to the plate with the game on the line. And that's all you ask for right there is guys that want to be in that situation. And I think everything that they've gone through this year has made them stronger and gotten them ready for this point of the season. And now we'll see if it happens or not, but we'll find out this weekend. But I think they're ready.
One of the big things for this team is that they keep falling behind. Bobby, you mentioned it a little bit earlier. They've come back from a 5-0 deficit the last two Friday nights. They came back from a 5-1 deficit to win game two against Vanderbilt. What's the key to keep from falling behind in these games?
Well, you know, I just gave you the line of Connor Nolan with that second inning where he gave up the four runs. He really made one bad pitch the whole inning and gave up four runs. I think it's just their starting pitching, just being a little more consistent. You know, they're walking a few guys that they didn't early in the year. You know, Hagen Smith has showed signs of getting it back and being really good. I thought he made some great pitches on Saturday, you know, but he's just not consistent. It's just still putting guys on base, and it's those walks that really hurt you. You know, I look at Will McIntyre. I mean, he pitched great this weekend. Once again, three innings, two hits, no runs, no walks, three Ks. I mean, that's another great outing by Will McIntyre. But I think the key is just, you know, coming out early on, establishing the strike zone, just like we did early in the year. And I think we've got the guys to do it. I really do. Now, the difference is in this time of year is we won't be down 5-0. I think he's going to pull the trigger a little bit quicker because he's got guys that he trusts in that bullpen now, you know, whether it be Will McIntyre coming in early in a game. But I think that's the key. It's just going out early and just taking care of business early in the game. But the beauty of it is, Matt, I know this is kind of a long-winded answer to your question. I don't think these guys, they don't fear getting down. I mean, when you get down 5-0 on a Friday night, a lot of time it's game over. But not with this guy, this team. I mean, they know that they're capable of coming back and scoring runs. And they know that the bullpen can come in and shut that team down, which is the most important equation, piece to the puzzle right there, is knowing that your bullpen can shut that team down and give us a chance to get back in the game and just kind of chip away a little bit and kind of bite the other team at the end.
This is where the season gets fun. Arkansas's regular season finale against Alabama this week, and then it seems like it just kind of comes a snowball from there. They go to Hoover. They'll play at the SEC tournament. Memorial Day is when the NCAA tournament selections are announced, and boom, before you know it, Bubba, in about 2.5 weeks, we've got regionals probably at Baumwalker Stadium. It would be a real big shock to see Arkansas not host on week one. The question right now is whether or not they could host on week two if they win the regional round. We'll be back with another podcast next week to talk about the Razorbacks in Alabama and to talk about the Razorbacks draw at the SEC tournament. Come to WholeHogSports.com all weekend. We'll have updates on the standings, on other games going on, of course, on the Razorbacks game against Alabama. Arkansas could potentially clinch another SEC West championship this week against the Crimson Tide. For Bubba Carpenter, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next week on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store.
and visit us anytime at wholehogsports.com for the latest news and commentary.